Hello and welcome back to the Monstrong podcast, episode 14 now with me, Gary House, the head honcho here at the Monstrong Club. We cover everything with your training, mindset and nutrition, hopefully in an entertaining way inside the club. The easiest way to get involved is to jump on my email list. The link will be in the show notes or it's always in my bio on Instagram. The last week for me, training has took a bit of a halt, took a bit of a hit. I've had sinusitis. You could probably hear it might sound like I'm underwater at the minute. I'm still bunged up, can't shift it, along with what seems like the majority of the country. The storms are hitting us. Everyone's sick. So yeah, training is just doing what I can when I can at the moment. It also meant that when I was meant to record a podcast, it just did not happen, unfortunately. But we have got a guest presenter this week. Rupert Bonington from Mountain Fuel is going to run the show this week. So it's a pre-recorded interview with Rupert and Jonathan Alban, who has recently started using Mountain Fuel as his main kind of nutrition during races and training. And if you don't know who Jonathan Alban is, or John Alban is, I'm not sure where you've been, but he's a trail and obstacle world champion, and it's really interesting to hear about how he has used Mountain Fuel in training and how he plans to use it in his kind of training going forward with his first multi-day trail race in July. So Rupert is going to kick off the conversation. It is mainly around John's use of Mountain Fuel and what he plans to do with it. Like I said, it gives you a good insight into all the products. It gives you a good insight into John's training. So yeah, it's not me this week, unfortunately. I'm hoping to be better next time because my next podcast will be a lone kind of show because I have got one planned on social media and running. So hopefully that will be up next week. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Rupert and Jonathan. It will be me back next week, unfortunately for some, but if you do enjoy the podcast, please keep reviewing us. Please keep giving the 5-star reviews. It really helps and it will allow me to keep doing these in future. For everyone that does get to the end of the conversation, I'll be back just to let you know how to enter a quick competition where you can win some Mountain Fuel in form of the taster packs. They're really good. And also Rupert's let me spread the word about the Runstrong discount code that all our members get. So if you listen to the podcast, you will get a small discount code and a chance to win a taster pack. Okay, here is Rupert and John.
Cool, really was so I can get a full handle on like all the products and how to use them in training and racing. Because I've got all the products now and I've started using them. Obviously, I've been using some of them for the past 2 years and I've only just started with like the entire range. So it's for me to get a feel, like a bit more knowledge on how everything works in racing and what I should be doing in training. But also I'm going to get like thousands of questions from other people on the exact same stuff. And I figured if I'm going to be trying to answer in those questions, it's better if they just hear it from the horse's mouth and we can record this and everyone can sort of have a listen at their leisure and see if they can learn as much as I do from the call.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, why don't we just start at the start? So if I kind of quickly run over the kind of products, then we can kind of then look at applying them to possibly how you'd use them in different training scenarios, and then we can look specifically at the multi-day race.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So we start listing the products would be a good start.
Yeah, so we've got a kind of a sequence of kind of a system that kind of can start or finish with a product that we call Night Fuel. Now, Night Fuel is essentially can be made into like a cold shake or a hot chocolate, but it's not just a kind of drink. If you imagine, it's like a liquid food in a sense. Because in there, you've got your carbohydrate mix, you've got your protein mix, but it's a slow-release protein mix, and then you've also got sodium in there as well. So basically, what we're doing is that while you're sleeping, we are slowly replenishing and feeding the muscles, because often when you race or train, it can be in the early hours or early starts. So you haven't got time to have a big breakfast. You don't want a big breakfast because you don't want a lot in your stomach. So that's kind of feeding your system. So when you wake up, even if you've got a very limited amount of time or no time at all to have something to eat first, you've at least got something in your system and you've actually been looking after your muscles.
So yeah, that's what you start with. Yeah, that's like great, because also like for me, especially the night before, I want to try and eat as much as possible, but that's not always possible. So
yeah,
you can, it's really hard when you travel and race to actually get enough in you the night before the race. So being able to top yourself up with something like that,
definitely, like, you know, yeah, and especially because it's kind of like it's difficult depending on the country you're in or the time you arrive. Like you've said, it's you can sometimes. You can find food, but sometimes it's not necessarily the kind of stuff that you want to be stuffing your face with late at night when you've arrived, because it will keep you up all night because it's your system's trying to break it down. So it is a fantastic option. But then we kind of move on to what we kind of call a morning fuel. Now, the morning fuel, we kind of call it that because it kind of fits nicely into the system when we're describing it like this. However, it's incredibly versatile. The morning fuel can be used any time of the day in lots of different scenarios, and I'll talk about that. But the product itself, if you imagine a big bowl of gluten-free oats, we make it gluten-free, so it's less, it's basically easier on the stomach without the gluten in there. We've basically whizzed it up, so we've powdered it up, so you've now got this big bowl of oats, so you've been powdered up into this small 50 gram kind of package, and in there we've got inulin, so you've got your good gut bacteria. And then we also put a protein mix in there, and we also have flaxseed in there, and we have a small carbohydrate mix in there as well. And basically what that does is that you can mix it with hot water, cold water, hot milk, cold milk, incredibly versatile, and it can either be mixed into like a kind of a porridge-type consistency or as a shake. And it's totally down to preference. Some folk love to drink it as a shake, a couple of 100 ml of water or milk. Other people, like myself, prefer to have it literally as a 6 or 7 spoonful kind of porridgey type paste. And it because it's powdered, it kind of goes into the system. It's very easy to absorb. It doesn't sit in your stomach, so you don't feel like you've got anything in your system. So obviously when you've got an early start or you can't get up, like some races, especially abroad, kind of endurance ones, Ironmans, where it's something you might have to get up at 2 a.m. You know, you don't even feel hungry, but you need something in your system. But it's very slow release. And it's also, because of the protein content in there as well, and it's got a good carbohydrate mix in, but between the oats and the protein mix, it really slows down that sugar spike. So it's a really sustained energy release. And as an example of that, we were at an event last weekend. A guy came to see me. He's a type 1 diabetic. My daughter's a type 1 diabetic, so I understand blood sugars a lot. And he was basically saying, look, I have a real problem in the morning. Go out to train. My blood sugars, they just spike. You know, every time I go out, because I've got to have something before I go, and they either spike, and if I don't have something, they actually just drop through the floor. And as a type 1 diabetic, going through the floor is not good, because that's heading towards a diabetic coma, or going really high is not good, because that's when you're kind of causing a lot of damage to your cells and your vital organs. So you've got to really try to keep your blood in range. Now, he basically had the morning fuel as an experiment. He didn't take any insulin, so he didn't inject for it. So he didn't try to counteract the carbohydrate content in there. And what he found was, and he also has a blood monitor, and he found it just steadily rose while he was out. It never spiked like a normal having some kind of carbohydrate would have. And then it just plateaued out, and then it just gently came back down into range. And he was absolutely shocked. And he came to see me about kind of 10:30, 10:45. And he said, the other thing is, I'm still not hungry. You know, and it was a real relevant kind of revelation to him that there were products that he used, very kind of sugar resistant, can actually use while he's training. So for people doing events, you don't want to have somebody in the morning that gives you that massive sugar spike. Isn't great. You want something that's going to be a sustained energy release. And that's why we designed the morning fuel. But like I said, it can be taken anytime. For doing ultras, they'll use that at other times, like, you know, a kind of mid-race, you know, like if they've got a drop bag after 12 hours or 10 hours, they'll actually have that as part of their fuel. We've known guys who are doing the spine race multi-days where there's no fixed time for sleeping. They will literally, apologies, and didn't turn my phone off. they will literally use that as their fuel because they're not massively burning through glycogen. They just need a slow, steady release. They'll actually using a combination of the morning fuel and the chocolate recovery. They won't even touch a fast acting kind of energy drink or gel or whatever. And so the morning fuel is great. You can also make stuff with it, make little pancakes and stuff. So that's a great little verse. That's the kind of second product in the range.
Yeah, so far I've put normally just some water with it, and it makes like a milkshake, but there's still some sort of phlegmy lumps in it, which is kind of like a nice sort of, so it's got some texture to it, even though it's kind of like milkshakey. I've made pancakes with it as well, so they were pretty nice. But then I also put like loads of other stuff in there as well, but it just kind of like added something extra in there, so that was nice.
Yeah, no, they're good. Well, we've got a recipe online for kind of making pancakes and stuff, you know, and it's good. We've kind of used banana, coconut oil and stuff, and they're nice. So they're brilliant. They're really versatile. Then I'll mention the kind of bars. So we've got bars. I mentioned these because, again, these are another actually quite good breakfast sauce. They are very different to other bars that are out there. They're not a protein bar. They're not your typical flapjack. Again, we've made these. Everything I kind of make. Sorry, I'm getting hounded. I've not turned my phone up properly. Turn it off. You basically made it so that it is very easy on the stomach, and it's something that I can give my daughter, basically. So she, because she's type 1 diabetic, she's also got autoimmune issues, so she's celiac, but she does want to be active and do stuff. So we designed these so that they are gluten-free, they're dead easy on the stomach. They happen to be vegan, but we didn't necessarily deliberately go out just to create yet another vegan product. They just happen to be vegan with the ingredients that we use. But they're very energy dense. So we don't use butter. We don't use syrup. We basically have the base ingredients are flaxseed, because you've obviously got your omega-3s. You've also got protein in there. If you combine it with another protein, so we've got buckwheat in there as well, and that makes a complete protein. Then we've got gluten-free oats, and then we've also got coconut oil, a bit of grape juice, bit of chicory syrup, a little bit of brown sugar, because that actually helps bind it all together. But they are very, very energy dense. So, for example, it's a little 80-gram bar. It's very compacted. But that bar's got kind of 360, 370 calories. If it's a little bit bigger, you know, it can have, they can have 380 calories in there. So you don't need to have a lot of them, you know, like a quarter at a time. Will actually keep you going for a long time, because you're actually getting the bulk of your energy is actually from the combination of the coconut oil, the flaxseed. You've got the fats from that help in burning. Because of those fats, you also find that they're very, very easy to eat. So even on the run, they're still, you know, you don't need to, you know, they don't turn into sawdust. They're not dead hard. You know, they're kind of designed to have on the go, compared to something that's a kind of glorified snack bar with a few extras in there kind of thing. So I'd say that's a great breakfast alternative, again, because you can have that before an early morning training session. It's going to slow release, it's going to energize you, but you're not going to feel really hungry afterwards. It's a great one for long training sessions, again, when you're out. And it's a great one pre-race, later on kind of thing. So that's the bars. Then we've also got the energy drink. So again, the energy drink, we would kind of argue, is different to many drinks out there. Yes, we have a carbohydrate mix in there. Yes, we have your kind of electrolytes, your mineral mix in there as well. But what we also do is we make sure that we have a vitamin content in there. you need to have vitamins in an energy type drink, because actually to get the best function out of your muscles, you actually need certain vitamins to help with that energy process. And also on top of that, a lot of people, when they're training and they're starting to pick up their training, they're building towards an event, can be very susceptible to colds and things like that, because they're draining it, their system of vitamins, making their autoimmune systems low, which means they're very susceptible to any lurgies and illnesses that are flying around. So because of that, we essentially have a multivitamin in there to help offset those things as well. And we also have a little bit of kind of creatine in there, because that just helps with that firing the muscles up. So you're kind of getting your fast acting, your slow acting. There's also, because of that, there's amino acids in there as well. So, you know, the energy feels a very rounded product. We don't put fructose in it. Fructose, there's a lot of stuff out there about fructose. You have this magic combination that allows you to have 90 grams of carbohydrates an hour. The issue we have with that is that there's very few people that can get away with 90 grams of carbs an hour for a long time. And typically, when you do an event, you'll often have other things as well. So it's a very hard thing to keep on top of, especially if you're in a longer event where you're stopping at aid stations. And fructose, it needs a special process to get through your stomach. And if you start having a buildup of fructose, that's when you start having stomach issues. So we don't deliberately go down that kind of multi-carbohydrate transport route. Although we do take advantage of it, because obviously the bars have got some fructose in it. It's got the apple juice, things like that. Our jellies, which I'll come on to, again, they've got some fructose in them because we use apple juice. So we do take advantage of the benefits of having that kind of multi source of carbohydrate, but we don't push it to the limit because we feel that can actually lead to more problems than results.
The energy drink is actually one that I hadn't really had before, especially the flavoured ones. And found the tropical one is crazy. It's really powered me through some training sessions so far this year. I've got a cross country ski friend who's he went to the Olympics, but he's sort of like quit now. He was interested, so I gave him a sachet and he tried it today for the first time and said it's the best session he's had for forever. So I think he mentioned something about reading it had some protein in or something in it.
Essentially, it's got some amino acids in there as well.
He was full on. So that was fun. And it's really powerful. I've been doing these 10% treadmill intervals, mainly in zone 3, and like building up from about 30 minutes of work up to an hour and 10. And the first interval is always a bit meh, but once you get some of the drink in your system, you're kind of raring.
I think the thing is for us, and again, I'll keep touching on this. For us, first and foremost, we have tried to produce products that have a balance of all the things that your actual body, your muscles, your brain, all the things need to make it feel better. So you're making your muscles feel better by you putting back in them what they want. Because you're doing that, you're also helping to feed your brain. So you're feeling good about what you're doing. So you can kind of train harder, train longer, perform better. And also, but because you actually, the flavors are nice, they're kind of subtle, they're not overly strong, you kind of look forward to having them. So again, that encourages you to feel better. And if you feel better, you recover quicker. And because you recover quicker, you feel it better because you get back to training sooner. So it's, to us, it's like a complete process. Do you mean? I think products that are there just to give you a massive energy boost or to give you a massive caffeine hit or anything like that. Absolutely. Like, yeah, they can give you those things, but they could also actually help deplete the system when they run out. And because of that, you get muscle stress. Because of that, you get exhaustion. Because of that, you feel shit the next day. And actually, you know, we do this because we enjoy it. Whatever level we're doing it at, we should be enjoying it. You know, it might be hard, but we should be enjoying the process. And that's what we try to kind of do with the products. So the next thing will be is the recovery fuels. So again, same approach to recovery fuel. Well, people will look, and I see it events, they'll pick it up and they'll look at the back and they'll oh, it doesn't have 20 grams of protein in. And you're like, well, you know, what we're not trying to make you a bodybuilder. What we're trying to do is ensure that you've got lean, strong muscle that is resynthesized, that's recovered, that's going to help you run again later today or tomorrow. So again, the balance, the kind of the matrix of protein, of carbohydrate, of vitamins that we put into that recovery fuel is for an active athlete. It's not for a gym bunny. It's not for somebody wanting to build big muscles. It's for somebody who actually wants to have functional activity and actually make sure that what they're having is actually going to aid that recovery process and not necessarily add extra water through fillers and all those kind of things that you often find within a recovery product. So pretty much that is the system. You know, that's kind of all the components of it. And like you've said, you've kind of used different elements of it the past couple of years in races. You've kind of used more of it now within that as far as the whole system in your kind of training, but you've never kind of had the opportunity to use it properly as a system day on day, as you will when we kind of build up towards the multi-day event that you've got kind of coming up, which is going to be really, you know, I'm really looking forward to that because it's a new thing for you, and it'd be, you know, it's really, this is what I love talking and helping folk work out a strategy and then building on it. So there you go. That's the product overview.
Sounds good. But more on the gels though, I reckon.
Oh, I forgot. How could I forget the jellies?
Well, you touched them.
I touched on them. Yeah. Oh, see, right. Well, the jellies are the biggest step forward that I think that we've made. We've never wanted to make a gel. A gel is a syrup. All gels out there, pretty much, there's only, other than obviously your kind of your so-called natural gels, there's only one other similar kind of gel jelly, describe it to us. And it kind of took us 2 years to make. And the reason why we made it is that because a typical gel is a syrup, even when they're kind of adding loads of water to it, it still has a similar issues in your stomach, because what happens is it passes, because it's syrup, it passes very quickly through your stomach. And when it hits your intestines, you're getting this massive surge, this kind of spike of sugar. And what happens to actually get it through the intestinal wall, it needs to draw water from your organs, from your working muscles, from your system. And if it can't, that's when people have those feelings of thirst, of an energy dip, of an upset stomach. And, you know, unless they're trying to drink lots of water, which you can't do, it kind of can put you on a roller coaster, which often ends in upset stomachs and issues. So we kind of spent 2 years trying to come up with something a bit different. And it was actually from kind of the medical world. So they, within the medical world, they use pectin, and pectin can be used for dealing with things like acid reflux. And you can basically create like a hydrogel using a pectin. So we basically created a kind of hydrogel using the pectins, because it basically draws in the fluid, it draws in the carbohydrate, and it draws in the mineral, so the electrolyte. And because of that, it's encapsulated. And the pectin, basically, it means that it helps slow it down through your stomach. So it's going down slower through your stomach. So when it goes into the intestinal wall, because it's all encapsulated, it also helps with that process of getting through your intestines. So you don't, because it's already, it's hydrated. So you don't need to be drawing additional fluid. So even when it's hot, you can still have the jellies without having to have lots of different water. You can have, well, you know, you can literally just have the jellies and not worry about GI issues that you would get with having a typical gel. So to me, the jellies, they're our baby. We love them, and yeah, I think they're a massive thing that can really, really help folk. Particularly folk, we've got guys who've got Crohn's, various different IBD related, diseases, so stomach issues, who can now enjoy racing again using the jellies. So, you know, I love it that you're using our products, and, you know, but it's also those guys, because I see it with my daughter, you know, with the issues that she has with, you know, celiac and diabetes, seeing folk who've struggled before, seeing them actually being able to do what they love doing without the associated stomach issues, it's just fantastic. So, yeah, that's the jellies.
Yeah, I think the jellies is what I use first from Mountain Fuel, and I guess that's kind of like what got me into it. And that's, I guess, when you're racing, that's sort of like the main product you're looking for to really give you that boost and added performance, but still not have any detrimental side effects. So
So I think really it's a kind of case of, like, how you apply the system to your training. And
yeah, so,
and
like, I mean,
how have you been doing it so far?
Well, at the moment I've got 3 key sessions where I'm taking products. 6+ hour slow ski sessions where I'm just plodding along. It's really not that high energy use, but obviously because it's such a long time, it does use some over time.
Yeah,
more zone 3-4 1-2 hour interval sessions, because at the moment I'm doing quite long intervals, so the interval session does seem to last quite a long time. And some specific strength sessions, especially leg strength. So far for the 6-hour ski, that's mainly if I'm starting early in the morning and I'm not gonna have that much breakfast, I'll be using the morning fuel. And then using the bars as I go. And then for the zone 3-4 intervals, mainly just the energy drink, especially the tropical one, and possibly a recovery fuel afterwards. And for the strength session, pretty much just a recovery fuel afterwards.
Sorry, I'm writing this down. And then how's that then going to alter? Because obviously this, right, so we've got the stage race in July. So between now and July, have you got any OCR stuff going on?
I've got a lot of other races. So I've got a lot of obstacle racing, a lot of sky running. So, I mean, the main types of races I'll be doing is sort of 3-6 hour type sky races, 1-3 hour type obstacle races or mountain running races, and obviously Oreo, which is the big 8-day multi-stage race. So that's the main types of races that I need a strategy for, especially the big one, because that's where I'm going to be required to recover very quickly, not have any dips in any of the stages, and all the stages are different lengths as well. So having a real plan for the multi-stage stuff, but then also just for the normal racing too.
So what I would say is, within this kind of training block, this is like what we touched on before, it's about kind of making sure that your muscles are as well recovered and kind of nourished as possible. And obviously you eat well, a good kind of normal diet. But what I would say is this is where the night fuel, for example, can be quite handy, and you don't necessarily need to have it in the kind of full 35 gram kind of servings. You know, you could literally say, well, do you know what, the night before these sessions, I'm just gonna have a half serving of the night fuel.
Before any in particular session, because obviously I do training pretty much nearly every day, so every day it will either be strength or intervals or long slow skiing.
I would say for what you're going to be doing, so you typically, I would say your 6-hour ski session, because you're typically going to be up reasonably early for that, weren't you, for the light and all that kind of stuff.
It really does depend, but I mean normally there's a drive to get there as well and stuff, so it does take time out of the day.
So I think a night fuel that night would be like the night before would be useful, because then you just add into that process. I would even consider I would even consider why. So what do you have for breakfast that day?
I guess it would shift and change, but a normal breakfast is like 4 or 5 scrambled eggs on bread.
Yeah.
And then pretty much top up with more bread with something like Liverpool style, what's that in English? Pate. Brown cheese maybe, or the fallback is always just a big thick layer of peanut butter with a big thick layer of blueberry jam. It's good, it's good. I mean, I eat a healthy diet, but then I have to just add on calories afterwards. So sometimes I just go to the bread with the peanut butter and jam on, and then that's just like calorie after calorie after calorie ready for burning.
No, that's fine. And as well, I presume at the end of the day, if you're driving, you can grab stuff, you can be eating in the car. You can still be eating your, if you make a roll or whatever, you can be eating that on the way kind of thing, can't you?
Yeah. It really just depends on where it is. It's been such a bad winter now. I've either had to drive a lot for the snow, or I've been living at a cabin where the snow is, so then it's just kind of out the door and you're skiing.
You see, I would as well. See, what I would consider is actually sipping away in an energy fuel on the way in the car. Because ultimately, like we touched on before, all of this, and I know you're getting a lot of your vitamins and stuff through your natural diet, but over that kind of 6-hour session, you are burning through your, and what you're doing is you're always, your level of fitness, because you're training so much, your level of fitness is always kind of one person's sneeze away from you getting a cold. Kind of thing, isn't it? You're always on that kind of borderline of your immune system. So essentially, the energy fuel is not only just giving you that kind of that glycogen replenishment, but it's also giving you your kind of your multivitamin within it. So I would consider that for your long, steady, slow days, because that again, when you're sitting in the car, it's just something you can easily just sip away on. And it might not be, you don't even drink it all, you might actually just sip the other half of it on the way back.
That sounds good. Normally maybe at the Ribena one, I could add hot water and make sort of like a hot Ribena drink, so that can be quite nice.
Yeah Like, you mean the blackcurrant flavor one?
Sorry. Just gonna hoover the house afterwards as well.
But for those intense sessions, absolutely energy fuel, and definitely a recovery fuel after those interval sessions. And then again with the strength sessions, the reality is you are, when you're doing those, you are going to be doing, you know, more damage, which is obviously good because it's strength and conditioning. So again, that recovery fuel is really important afterwards. And again, we've got the vitamin mix within the recovery fuel. So I don't think there's anything particularly you need to kind of add to that. And then it's just a case of, realistically, it's just a case of kind of how you're feeling. Because if you're feeling that you're starting to get tired and you're starting to get fatigued, that is something where you might start thinking, well, actually, before that strength session, I actually might have an energy fuel. You know, two hours before, because then again, all you're doing is you're just topping your system back up. You're just making sure you're hydrated, your glycogen's up there. As well, for that strength session, you're actually, because there's a bit of creatine within the energy fuel as well, that would be good for that strength session. But, you know, within all of these things, it's a balance, isn't it? Because you're balancing it with a natural diet as well, which you've already got a good natural diet.
Yeah, it can always be better, but it's, I think,
yeah, like, this could be a balance.
Person's healthy diet, but then I just add a lot of stuff on top for the
calories. You're burning. Yeah, exactly. But ultimately, calories are calories. You know, when you've got to replace calories, and your body is so good at dealing with stuff, if you're burning it, kind of what you put in it is that kind of calorie replacement, as long as it isn't absolute crap, it's all right, you know. So I think training-wise, I think what you're doing, just adding those extra little bits, is fine, because I don't think you necessarily need to, you know, use the full system as such, as far as having the night fuel, morning fuel, definitely have an energy drink, then utilizing the bars and the jellies all within one. That's more your kind of race day scenario.
Yeah, I think the only one is when I do add in the morning fuel, it's more that if I'm doing like an interval session, more sort of like around 11 o'clock, and I've had breakfast, and then I've not exercised within the next hour or two, but I've exercised before lunch. It's kind of like a go-to, just topper upper,
just so a quick
I'm
check.
Not hungry while I'm actually training, because that's like probably the worst thing you can do is when you train an empty stomach, you just feel awful.
Yeah. And the morning feels good because of that, especially for those that kind of interval and the strength session, for example, because it's got the protein in it as well. That would be really good for those sessions.
I guess it kickstarts that process.
Yeah. Yeah. So should we talk through, for example, then like your typical kind of obstacle race?
Yeah, I mean, because they can be so variable, but the majority of them last between sort of, I guess, about half an hour to about sort of around 2 hours, to be honest. You got like the 3K and stuff, and that's more like 15 minutes, but they're not so often in the year for me.
No. So really, you're short and sharp, you're kind of half an hour jobs. They are literally, you're just preparing for those by, you know, like you found with your kind of interval sessions, an energy fuel before those is enough to get you through those. When you're doing the 2 hour jobs, then obviously that's where you are able to utilize, whether it be the energy fuel with a combination of jellies or a bar and a combination of jellies. And obviously, what I would also say, any kind of race day, I would use the system. So I would have the night before, I'd have the night fuel, breakfast time, I'll be having the morning fuel. And it might be depending on the time of the actual race. What you could do is kind of what you're doing now. You could maybe have like, if there's going to be quite like, say, a 3-4 hour gap between when you have your breakfast and when you're actually racing, you could have your standard breakfast, your eggs, and all that kind of stuff. But then actually, a couple of hours later, you could have a little morning fuel shake.
Yeah, again, so, I'm already kind of doing that. So that's worked well so far. Because before race day, you never want to have anything that sort of repeats on you anyway. But then sticking to what you're used to is also a pretty good thing, isn't it? So
Yeah. And again, I'm religiously, I have like a shake, whether it's pre-made or whether it's got me milk, water, whatever, with me sachet and me mixer, and I'll have that after every race. Even your half an hour race, I'll have a shake after it.
The shorter the race, the harder you push, so I guess it's
you're gonna
be doing the damage.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of go wrong. They don't appreciate actually some of that shorter stuff. You're doing more muscle stress than you are necessarily the longer stuff, where you're having to pace yourself more.
Yep.
So then really the kind of sky races, again, when you're looking at your kind of 3 hour sky race, is obviously going to be very different to your 6 hour sky race, in what you're going to have to carry and take on board. Because your 3 hour...
Up to now, I don't think I've really taken solid food when it's around 3 hours.
No.
And then when it's up to 6 hours, I've normally taken a bar like every 2 to 3 hours sort of thing, or maybe just one halfway, just to sort of put something solid in the stomach, which burns a bit slower, I guess, but more just so there's something else in your stomach than all the sort of like jellies and the liquid stuff you're putting in there.
Yeah. No, and I think that's right. I think what you're doing there is the right thing. And ultimately, if you're having it halfway, it's still going to be burning in that latter stage of that second half of the race. So it's still going to be topping up on top of the jellies, the drink that you're going to be drinking. But I think for those races, for your kind of three hours, your 6 hours, what would you like for you I think when we first kind of talked about the kind of jellies and stuff, I think I kind of said to you, well, look, I think every, I can't remember what I said, every 30 minutes to 40 minutes have one. And I think what, I think that was at Sky, was that Scarfell Sky Race?
Yeah, I think the main difference of that is it was jellies slightly less often, but then having the energy fuel as well. So then you're kind of using the both instead of just taking a gel every 20 minutes, because that way you've got to carry like 13 gels with you, and you just fill your stomach up with gel, and it's not that nice once you've just been taking one thing for the entire time.
Yeah, and I think that's why on the longer stuff the bars are great, because of that calorific content. So I think if people are kind of listening to this and thinking about how they're going to kind of do it, you know, even on a 3 hour, like a lot of people on a 3 hour race, they don't wear a race vest. They might just have a bum bag or whatever. I personally, I'd wear a race vest, because then you've actually got easy accessible all your bits. So you know where your bar is, you know where your jellies are. If you're going to carry a drink, take a drink, but you don't necessarily, you can kind of make those choices on, if you carry a drink, you've obviously got the weight of the water as well as the fuel itself, whereas you might actually be better off maybe putting a number of jellies into a soft flask and actually having that as your source with a bar. Because do you ever put the jellies into a soft flask, or do you like to know exactly how many you're having?
No, five of the jellies fit perfectly in a 250ml soft flask.
Yeah.
So that works really well. And then I just practiced with sort of water, but it doesn't work perfectly, just how much of a sip and how many sips equals one jelly, for instance. I sort of practiced with that just to see how it works out. And then I've been trying lately to use a race vest less and less, just using a belt, just because it's a nicer feeling when you're running. But then you can still have a soft flask, like a 500ml soft flask and a 250ml soft flask and your race kit as well. And the powder mixes up with water relatively quickly as well, so you can take powder with you, maybe even in a spare soft flask which doesn't have water in. So then you could just fill it up in a river as you go.
Yeah, that, I think that's useful. I think actually having it pre in a soft flask saves a lot of faff, saves a lot of hassle. And as well, depending on, it might be that on a really hot day, it might be if you're on a longer race or whatever, you might actually want to mix it to a different kind of volume. So you might want to dilute it. You know, so for example, for a later, if you know that, for example, it's going to be bloody baking hot, and you've got your jellies, you've got one drink to start with and you've got some jellies, but you know that 5 hours in, actually, all flavours get intensified. Everything becomes, so actually you might actually only put 3/4 of your sachet in your 500ml, because it's diluting down the flavour. You're still going to be getting 3/4 of the calories, you're still going to be getting 3/4 of the carbohydrates. So you do have to make allowances for that, but it's actually more palatable in the sense of that. I think if you're racing at a very high intensity and it's very hot, it's more important to get that hydration through your system and look forward to having it and having it regularly, than if you've got something that you are thinking, that's actually starting to taste quite sweet now. Even though we do try to make the powders relatively subtle in flavour, ultimately there is still flavour, so it's going to intensify. But this is where the raw is good for that. I think the raw, for if you know it's going to be really hot, I think the raw is the kind of go-to. Well, personally, I find the raw the go-to for that.
Yeah, that's actually, I have one, I call it a flavour, but I guess it's flavourless, isn't it? Which I haven't got that much of, actually, because I've got the 1.5 kilos, is it 1.5 or 1 kilo bulk bags of most of the stuff, which is great for me, because that way it's like less waste and less packaging and stuff, and I can sort of just spoon out in soft flasks and then fill them up as I go. But no, the raw is one I should actually try out in training a bit, because I need to try all this out in training. That's why we're talking now, even though I'm not going to have my first race before May, and Oria isn't till July, but we need to nail this down and actually
get me sort of used to the system during the training.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the raw, you'll find the raw is, it's a kind of, because you've got your natural minerals in there and you've got your natural kind of carbohydrate mix, you've got flavor from those. So it's a kind of like, I don't know, some people says it's kind of light lemony, but I just think it's just a, it's just kind of like a very subtly flavored water, but quite but refreshing. So I think that one is that's my on a hot day, that's my go-to.
Yeah,
absolutely. So that's definitely one that we'll need to have a go at, especially when it starts warming up.
Yeah,
at the moment it's like not very warm.
Minus 10 or something. So
yeah, that's no good for that. Yeah.
Yeah, the black currant warmed up is a little bit nicer.
Yeah, definitely. But I think the key thing is that you've already got a really good understanding. But I think for folk kind of listening, what we kind of say to people is, from the moment you start these your racing, you should be starting to instantly think about fueling. So within 10, 15 minutes, you need to be sipping. If you've got a drink, within kind of like half an hour, you should have taken on board a reasonable amount of carbohydrate. Because people kind of say, oh, but I've got to, you know, I've read all this stuff and I've got like an hour and a half of glycogen in my muscle, so I don't need anything. But the reality is, yes, I can actually go out tomorrow and I can run for 8 hours, but I'll feel bloody knackered and I'll absolutely stress the hell out of my muscles and I won't run very well for 8 hours. But if actually I was taken on board something very early on, I'm going to be able to sustain that run and I'm going to enjoy it more and my muscles are going to be better looked after and you're going to be able to maintain that pace. Because especially when you're doing that kind of 3 hour plus running, that's when you can almost start getting, by the sixth hour, you can start getting DOMS. You know, if you're not used to it, you can start getting DOMS, and that's why you've got to start taking on board your fuel early. That's why you've got
to. For Trail World Champs last year, I came up with this set an alarm on your watch for every 10 minutes.
Brilliant.
Every 10 minutes without fail, I take a sip, and on a hot day, I take a bigger sip than on a cooler day. And then every third alarm, I take a gel. That way, whether you're running uphill or downhill, because time seems to sort of change pace whilst you're doing these events. No matter what happens, a beep goes off and you take on some liquid or some sort of fuel.
Yeah, and that is a brilliant tip, because that's the one thing that the amount of times that I'll speak to people and when you actually talk through the race with them, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, how did you get on? And like, oh, no, I was doing really well, but you know, that last hour I really struggled and suffered, and you kind of chat through with them, and then the penny starts dropping and they realise that the reality is they didn't take up on enough food or drink to actually help make sure in that last hour, and it's the last hour that's the most important. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you do in a race, it's even that last 200 metres, you know, if you don't get to the line or you struggle to get to the line, the race isn't as good. You know, you've got to be feeling strong and good for as long as possible. And the only way you can do that is if you look after your muscles. And the only way to look after them is by drip feeding them.
Yeah, and so for me as well, I've got like probably an event the next weekend as well. So if I can get away with a race without actually completely depleting myself, I'm going to recover that way quicker as well. So
yeah, absolutely. And even folk who haven't got a race, but they actually just enjoy running or whatever they're doing, they want to get out training again. You know, they want to be able to walk down the stairs the following day. They want to be able to get to work and actually function. So it's just that drip feeding is absolutely crucial. So I think really, I think it's a case of the kind of standard races that you're kind of doing now, having that kind of recovery process, making sure that you're kind of drinking as you're going, making sure you've got the recovery at the end. It's fairly straightforward and kind of not far off what you're doing anyway, other than actually just starting to kind of practice utilizing all the products together, whereas you've kind of used a couple of them in the past in races, but not actually all together. But the key one really is the multi-day. And I think the multi-day is the one where, you know, if we kind of talk through that, because that's quite crucial, because there's so many factors involved in that kind of multi-day, because it's kind of more than just the kind of nutrition. It's like you touched on before, you've already got a kind of ritual with how you do your kind of take on board your race nutrition, but there's going to have to be rituals for what you do when you first get up, to make sure you've been to the loo, to make sure you've eaten at the right time, to make sure that within the race you're going to race the way that you need to race depending on the terrain. Because if you attack too early on day one and trash your legs on the first descent, that might not catch up with you straight away, but by day four you could be struggling to flow as well on the descent and things like that, and how you then, after each race, making sure that it's not just the food and what we're eating and how we're taking it, but actually your rituals for your warm down, for your rest, for your mobility, for your kind of body maintenance, looking after your feet, all these things, which I'm 100% sure you'll have thought of every single one. But it's probably worth us talking over so that other people who are maybe thinking about doing multi-day races and things can get a bit of a balanced idea between both our ideas.
Yeah, but to be honest, I mean, I've done multi-day stuff, but mainly just maybe max two-day events.
Yeah.
This is going to be a massive learning curve for me.
Oh,
and there is a lot of question marks on what is the best way to deal with a lot of things. So
yeah.
I definitely haven't thought of them all yet, and it is going to be a case of learning as I go. But the nutrition is one thing which is going to be absolutely key, because it's sort of a different distance every single day. Some are just uphill as well. I think at least one day is just sort of like a prologue, just uphill. So it's going to be really strange to race 5K all you can out, up day, uphill one day, and then 60K the next day. And the fielding is going to be completely different for the two races, but I'm going to have to be fully recovered on the Thursday for like another full day of running.
Yeah. So you've basically got, because the race itself, I might as well kind of talk it through for everybody. You've got day one, which is, like you said, you've got your 4K uphill. So you've got a 660-metre ascent, 20 metres up and down. But like you said, that is going to be, and again, this is where you need to decide, because obviously, I don't know if people are aware, but this race is, each stage has a prize fund. So first, second, third, fourth, down to, I can't remember what, has a different prize fund. And there's a prize fund for the overall winner as well, or the kind of number of winners. So I suppose it's that case of, you need to look at each stage. And I suppose this is the same for individuals. Like, if I was entering this, hey, I know I ain't going to win. So, you know, because I ain't going to beat you. However, I do want to do as well as I can each day to be able to turn around and think, hey, you know, I got an X position on that day. So it's like you've got to pick your stages where you feel you are going to make the most of it. Now, you might turn around and think, oh, Rupert, it's my first one. Actually, I want to kind of attack every single one and just see how it goes. And then, because it's my first one ever, so this is a learning process. Or you might say, actually, no, I actually want to be quite tactical, because, you know, I know that I'm better on the longer stuff, or I'm better on certain types of terrain. So actually stages X, Y, and Z are the ones that I'd really like to go for. And I think actually by doing those stages, if I can win them and I can be all right in the other stages, I've got a good chance of the overall prize as well. So I think it kind of falls back on you, in a sense, to kind of have an understanding of what your overall expectation is. What's your kind of mindset approach to the whole thing?
To be honest, I've just got no idea how it would pan out and how I would react to different situations, as to if someone went off really hard, or whether I'd like couldn't help but try and follow with them. Or I can only imagine it's going to be something sort of similar to the Tour de France, where it doesn't really get
serious until the big sort of like big climbs and stages like that. But I think to go out easier is always a more enjoyable way to approach racing and a safer way, because this is the first year that this event's being held, so no one's really got that much of a clue. So I think to stay on the side of caution is probably a good thing. But then also, I learned last year, if you don't really go for it, you rarely win. Sometimes you just have to take that sort of chance and then see if you could make it through. So it's going to be definitely interesting for me and I guess for people following.
Yeah. Would you say you're a natural descender? Is that one of your strengths?
I'd say my downhill is definitely stronger than my uphill. I'm definitely not as good, especially at elevation, at going uphill as some of the other athletes, but downhill, especially if it's very technical, I guess I can hold my own really well. But then that's got a big impact on your legs moving forward into the other stages. So I can hammer downhill like anything, not the fastest, but up there. But then my legs would be trash afterwards. So,
yeah, because really it's an interesting profile of this race. You've obviously got your uphill the first day, and that's your kind of afternoon you set off. That's going to be short and sweet. And it's something that, like you've said, there's no point hammering yourself too hard on that, because there's going to be people that are better at you than going uphill. So you just need to kind of make sure you're reasonably in the mix, so you're not too far down the overall order when it comes to the final rankings. But really, like stage two, for example, that 41K, 2,640 metres of ascent and 2,640 metres of descent, you've actually got within not far at all from the start, you've actually got a massive long descent, which would really suit you, but obviously not suit you to smash yourself. But that's maybe where you're able to kind of just let yourself naturally flow without pushing too hard. Because the following day after that, stage three, is pretty much straight into a big, big climb with a bit down, another big climb, and then it's just kind of undulating. So it's kind of like, it's slightly opposite to what was kind of said earlier about kind of taking it easy. It's kind of taking it relatively steady, but I would be looking at that thinking, well, actually stage two, as long as I don't absolutely trash my legs on that descent, I would use that to make sure I'm in a decent position, or that's possibly a stage. If everybody else is thinking, I'm going to be taking it easy because I want to build into this, that's possibly a stage where you could at least make sure you are sitting on the shoulder whoever is trying to kind of push it out, as long as they're not trying to hammer themselves.
Yeah, I think by that point we'll probably start seeing who's actually serious about racing and winning, and who's just going to blow up after the first couple of days, or who's like the real threats, I guess.
Yeah, because that second day, for example, 41K, 2,640 metre ascent plus, say, descent, how longish do you think that's going to take you?
Oh, so wait, what were the stats again?
So it's 41K, and you've got, 2,640 metres of ascent, but it's the same descent.
I think if you were going full out, something around 3 hours 45 to 4 hours.
But so I would say...
I don't think you can go absolutely full out in that. So it's more like an extra half an hour kind of maybe.
Yeah, so you're talking 4:15 to 4:30, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah.
If the going's good. But I think they're not the most technical trails. Obviously, slightly technical, but they're not... they're not just boulder fields and ridges and snow fields and stuff. So,
yeah. No, reading the profile, I think you're right. I think it's actually quite nice trails on a lot of this stuff. So 4:15, 4:30. So you're basically talking about it's going to be energy fuels, jellies, with your system that you've got now, every 10 minutes, every third one, you're going to be knocking back a jelly. That's kind of like, it's kind of borderline on actually like quite near the start of the race, actually having half a bar.
Yeah, so you're actually trying to get used to taking the solid fuel as well, because I'll be doing that in the, yeah, the next couple of days afterwards. It's just maybe just a good thing just to start going, yeah, with.
Yeah, you know, and it's, again, it's, you could almost like literally put, chop the bar up and actually have it in little, in little wraps, so, yeah, that, you know that that's all I'm going to have. That's all I need. I just have that one little bit, bang, goes in, eat it, sip, sip, sip. Jelly half an hour, and then you know then it's in your system, but you're getting that solid, that kind of solid food in as well, because the day after that is definitely going to be a lot more fast and furious, because the day after that is 25K. It's 2,230 meters up and 1,680 down. And the profile is,
and down, yeah,
so you're pretty much going straight into a climb. The first half is pretty much to your maximum height. And then it's kind of undulating down. It's kind of a rolling, little climbs down, little climbs, and then a final climb to the finish. So what you're kind of talking, what, 2.5 hours for that? 3 hours?
I know, because it's still quite a lot of climb. It's sort of as much climb as in the 42K.
Yeah.
Minus 300 metres, but
minus
20K, so it's a lot steeper. Obviously, you've got less downhill, so that means it's not exactly the same climb and descent per kilometre, but maybe 2.5 to 3 hours, I guess.
Yeah. So again, that's just straightforward jellies and energy fuel. But the key to all of these, what I should have said earlier, I think the key to all of this is that when it comes to that finish, actually having your recovery fuel ready, then actually the actual lunch that you have, you need to be eating a kind of main meal as kind of as soon as you can after this race.
Yeah.
Because what you want to do is give yourself as long a period as you can to kind of get that food into your system. And you're kind of better off, rather than having like a massive, massive lunch, you're better off having a reasonable-sized lunch, then actually, say, 2.5, 3 hours later, having another decent kind of snack of something. And yeah, then when it comes to your evening meal, having your evening meal as early as you can again, so the kind of first sitting, as soon as they open it or whatever, and actually looking at the foods in there and trying not to get anything too heavy, because what you want to do is make sure you have a decent night's sleep. So it doesn't want to be too meaty, because if it's too meaty, too fatty, then the danger is your stomach's processing, because you want to get to sleep as soon as you can. Your stomach's going to be kind of working, processing it while you're asleep, and you're naturally just not going to sleep as well. And as well, you are going to be at, because you actually sleep at resort height, don't you?
Yeah, it's like 2,000 metres or something.
Yeah, so you might not sleep brilliantly well anyway.
It's pretty bad, yeah. I race relatively poorly at elevation anyway, but this is one race that I should really try and acclimatise for. So it would be interesting to see how my acclimatisation goes and whether I can actually manage to. The sleep at elevation is often, you dream a lot more and you're a lot more restless, and you just generally recovery is a lot slower.
Yeah. Well, you've got within the night fuel, there is tryptophan, which is in theory meant to aid sleep. But what I would say is get that food in early. Try to make sure that your stomach is rested by the time you want to go to sleep, so that all it's doing is just gently working through your night fuel and not actually having to work through all your solids.
Yeah, so with the night fuel, are you saying with this, I mean, this is like kind of be quite a special event with 7 days of running over 8 days. Is it just one serving, or am I like going to bang two servings, or?
No, I would just have one serving, because again, you're not trying to overwork your system.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because within that process, you'll basically finish your race. You're going to have your recovery fuel. You're then going to go on to have some lunch. I would possibly also consider just over the afternoon, just sipping an energy fuel as well, because again, you're just rehydrating. You're making sure you're getting everything back in. You've got the sodium electrolytes in there, retaining the water, so you're keeping hydrated. You're basically going to have another snack or something kind of mid-afternoon. And then again, that could be a morning fuel. And then again, in that evening time, you're going to look at what you fancy. Do you know what I mean? What you fancy to eat, but just make sure it's not too heavy.
Okay. Sounds good. But there's no benefit in waking up during the middle of the night to have another night fuel, for example.
No, don't. All that's going to do is make you bloody knackered, because what happens if you can't get back to sleep?
Yeah, it's
your sleep is key. You know, you try to get to. I would even every afternoon, if you wouldn't try and have a nap.
Yeah, the problem with napping is if you can't fall asleep that evening, but it just really depends on how.
I would see how you're going to go, and you can set an alarm. But I think what you'll find is if you, or even maybe even not a nap, just relax.
Yeah, I'm going to be trying to have my feet up a lot anyway. In the month before, probably try and do like 3 hard sessions 3 days in a row to test all this out anyway, so I can really get a feel for how my body's going to react.
Definitely. And I don't know, are you good with like kind of self kind of massage and all that kind of stuff? And I'm not talking just with the standard flat roller. Are you kind of quite good at kind of self-massagey stuff on your kind of calves?
I got into a good routine last season with a good stretching and rolling routine, but that's something I've not been that good at previously. But I'm talking to different people and seeing which products I can use which are going to help the most. So it's still, that's a work in progress, to be honest.
Right. Well, I will have a word with one of our local gurus over here who's absolutely amazing, and I'll actually do a little video for you which you can maybe share to for self massage stuff, because that is the key. Like every day you need to make sure that you've got, because ultimately you're going to come in, your muscles are going to be fatigued every day, that we're not going to be able to keep 100% on top of recovery in a sense, because every day you are going to be racing, you're not doing it for fun, you're racing. Yeah. So we need to actually approach each thing with extra care. So that kind of stretching, mobility, that self-maintenance, like even down to little things like your feet, just really making sure that you kind of, there are no little burns on your feet, that your toenails are totally cut, you know, tiny little thing, making sure there's no little bits of stone wedged in your insole that might slip through and then start rubbing in a race that you can't stop. Because what we don't want is on the 4th and 5th day, and it's often on a multi-day, it's not really going to be until at least stage 5 that this race really hots up. Yeah. Because you've got stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, they've got ramping up. Your big day is stage 4, so you've got a 60K on stage 4, 3,700 m% up and down. But then you have a rest day after that. But the problem with having the rest day is that just gives your body time to think it's stopped.
Yeah, I think you're also pretty shit the day after that one.
Yeah, so what I would do on that rest day is I would try to gently kind of keep moving and just gently remind your body that it hasn't stopped yet.
And maybe a cycle or something like that, or getting a trainer.
Really gently, a real no resist, just cruising. Yeah. And if there's a pool, having a swim, and you know, just really, just because you really don't want your body to think it's had enough, because the next day you're back into nearly a 50K and a 3,000 meters of up and down. I think really once we've kind of got all these things nailed down. And I think really it's kind of like once you get to that stage where you are able to do like your 3-day, 2-day, 3-day of big volume days, and actually what you've used and how you've felt, then we'll be able to tweak things. Because it might be on this 60K day, for example, we need to find out if there's any kind of drop bag, or I don't know what the situation is there with kind of drop bags or being able to pick up stuff from feed stations.
I don't know either. I know Henrietta's going to be racing 3 days, so she'll have 3 days of racing. So that means there are some days when she can support me and hopefully be at aid stations and help. But yeah, it's going to be a bit of a nightmare to try and carry everything with you or to see how the loops are set up and stuff.
Yeah. But she'll be, imagine then, she'll be racing 5, 6, and 7. So the big day, stage 4, yeah. 60K, where you need the most assistance. If you are allowed to have stuff put at aid stations or even outside assistance or whatever, then that's actually the day that possibly we utilize like a morning fuel mid race.
Or yeah, so that's something fuel that mid race. Yeah, was taking the the recovery fuel possibly mid race, or even like making a pancake out of it. So it's something to have in addition to the bar.
Yeah, the pancakes are brilliant. The pancakes would be a way. The only issue you've got is you either need to take them with you when they're going to have a certain shelf life before they become, you know, not as good, just because they're going to dry out. Yeah, or if you've got, I don't know what kind of accommodation they're going to put you in, if you've got the ability to cook in there, then brilliant. Well, you just make them when you're there.
Yep.
But yeah, we need to find out off them about that 60K day as to what the kind of assistance is. Mm. So I actually think we kind of need, what would be useful would be like a follow-up kind of chat to this once we've done some more of these kind of tester days.
Yep, especially once I get running, because at the moment I'm doing a lot of skiing, so it's a lot less impact. Yeah. And is the impact, which is really going to be very detrimental in this race. And that's something I'm not really putting my body through at the moment. So.
No. And I think this is where pacing's key. I think you need to really study this, the profiles. And it's that kind of which terrain you're going to attack, what kind of pace you're going to have at different times. Because a multi-day, it's like, it's the kind of thing that the wheels, and you've maybe experienced this when you've done the kind of some of the 24-hour events that you've done on the OCR stuff, the wheels can just suddenly come off. And when they come off, it's bloody hard to get them back on. So, and often we'll find like in 24-hour races with folk, the race doesn't even get going. It's 18 hours. That's when the race really kicks off.
Yeah, I mean, normally I've paced myself with my heart rate and just picked a heart rate and said, I'm not going to go over this. But it's a bit crude when you're looking at so many days of racing.
That's going to be difficult for this one. You wouldn't, because of the different lengths of the races, because of the different profiles, you can't do that. I think this is where you've got to kind of study. Are you going to get a chance to recce this thing?
The plan is to go down to Europe. When my racing starts for the season, we'll be down there. So I'm sure I'll have a chance to head over to Morzine of Ordias, which is where it is in southern France. Yeah. It's just, I'm not sure, how much time I'll get to spend there. But I can do a lot of studying of the maps and the profiles and stuff. Yeah. And sometimes it's nice to not run each and every stage. Sort of like in the back of your mind, knowing that 60K day is absolutely horrendous.
I would definitely study the maps. I think we need to look at it and need to look at realistically, like we said at the start, about which of the stages you feel are worth kind of the ones that are going to suit you. Then they're the ones you can kind of, if you imagine this one race is your whole season, which are the ones that you want to just kind of get a reasonable result in, and which are the ones you want to get the best result in? Because realistically, to try and win every single stage, you might do it, but it's a dangerous game to play. You might naturally do it, but it's a difficult one, because you might have people who have no intention of running the entire thing and just go and smash themselves on a few stages.
And yeah, I think I don't even really know how the overall is calculated. Yeah, so it's hard to find out a plan because it could be that it's down to time or it's down to position. So there's lots of to be thought through.
Yeah, and the other thing, stage six, they're not going to release the profile until the actual race.
Yeah, okay, so there's a bit of a question mark.
Yeah, so they obviously feel that's maybe going to be quite technical and horrible. Maybe that's going to be the gnarly one.
Yeah, possibly, or just I don't know, maybe it's just 3k around the local hotel.
No, it's definitely 38k. Yeah, it could be 30.
Oh, okay, so they're not going to release the profile, but the distance
is 38. Oh, and it's 3,100 meters of ascent up and down.
Yep. So it's relatively steep.
Yeah, so it's going to be a chunky day.
Mm.
So, but the final day, stage seven, has lots that you'll enjoy. There's a big, massive, huge, long descent, steep climb. In his level,
yeah.
So that final day is definitely
one. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, no, it's good. So yeah, so I don't think we've been able to go into like massive detail for four, but I think we've given them an idea, and it's the kind of thing that I think once we've got a bit further down the line, when you can run and we can actually put some sessions together, longer days, we'll actually be able to maybe talk a bit more specifically. About nutrition and things.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very key to take to plan the right session, especially multi-day sessions. So it might be that I like try and do something like the Bob Graham over 3 days, just to make it a bit interesting. And it'll be pretty fun to do sort of some cool running, but also it's got a purpose of training me up ready for this big event.
Yeah. No, well, that'd be a great one to do. Obviously, even better
to get to come over, visit, and run some nice trails, but just sort of see some nice mountains and test the whole system.
Yeah, well, and as well for long enough on this.
Yeah, definitely longer than I was expecting.
An hour and 20. So, well, hopefully, folk will find it fairly interesting. Hopefully,
yeah, they'll just have to put it on what double speed when they're listening to it, or just plan an extra long treadmill session.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, there we go. Interesting stuff from Rupert and John. Really interested to see how Jonathan goes about kind of planning his nutrition and the insight into how he goes about planning races, especially this multi-day one that's new. A new concept to him. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. Hopefully we'll hear more about it. Like I said, you can enter a competition to win a taster pack from Mountain Fuel. You can find that link in the show notes. And also, if you use the code RUNSTRONG15, there will be 15% off all the products at Mountain Fuel. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. I will be back next week, hopefully with the social media episode.